This is GamesAtWork.biz with your hosts, Phaedra Boynodiris, Michael Martin, and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone, and not the opinions of any organization with which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with. This is episode 44, Machine Games. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Michael Rowe here. So glad to be back on another exciting episode of GamesAtWork.biz with my co-host, Michael Martin.
Hey, greetings and salutations from the great city of Budapest.
Woohoo, Budapest! Trying to remember what TV show or movie was it where the guy kept saying Budapest?
I don't know. I have thought about that recently. It's like, okay, how many people say I'm in München as opposed to I'm in Munich?
I call it München.
Or I know too, but it I guess it does sound a little bit like, oh, I'm from Budapest, and that's what they say in Budapest. It's Budapest. You're on the Buddha side. You're on the Pest side.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's the thing. You are where they are, and if you're in the place, you should have pronounced the name correctly.
I think so, too.
I think so, too. Anyway, so we have an exciting show to talk about today about games and work and maybe some biz. And I've been traveling a lot lately, which is something that had been held off for the longest time with my day job. And so I want to talk a little bit about some of the stuff that I saw this week where I was traveling. And I also want to talk a little bit about last week's show, which was awesome. I really wanted to be on it because I was sitting there listening to it on the plane this week going, oh, man, let me – and I'm sure people around me are like, is this guy having a spasm of some sort?
Something like that. Yeah, exactly.
Because I really wanted to jump in.
I figured you'd like the title. I guess now knowing that you're on a plane too, that you know that's also good.
Snakes on a plane. What was the television version of that about these?
I don't remember.
Mother fudging snakes on a mother fudging plane or something like that.
Jeez, really?
Yeah. It was like, okay, you pretty much know what was being said.
Yeah, exactly.
So anyway, had a couple of things. So let me talk first about the conference I was at and kind of pull it back into games. I was at the Exceda Connection Conference. For those of you who don't know what that is or who Exceda is, they're a company that has a set of capabilities to enable the Internet of Things. So it's all about machine-to-machine connections between – well, I was going to say machine-to-machine connection between devices, which is kind of redundant because by definition, machine-to-machine means a connection between devices that are talking
machines.
Stuff. Machines. And their devices.
Or connect.
And they're connecting. And they're doing stuff.
Okay.
But
yes. It
was actually really cool. There was a guy from Cisco there, and he was talking about how you have more and more of these interconnected devices that have, you know, over the last 10 years, really been driven towards the point of, you know, reducing cost, preventative maintenance, proactive maintenance, serviceability type things where you have a very high priced asset out in the field and it's very expensive to actually roll a truck, you know, is the term, to get out there and do a repair. So you want to make sure that when possible, you can proactively do maintenance activities on it or troubleshoot remotely to reduce the cost there, as well as to drive down downtime. And so when there is an outage, you want to be able to be at the machine as quickly as possible if it requires physical presence to repair, and then have all the right parts and components and yada, 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 right? But with more and more of these interconnected devices, the number of different ways to fix things and the complexity of all this stuff is coming up to where they found that they can't train technicians to do all the work that might need to be done on these devices.
And, right, just and, because the multiplicity of what connects to what and what sort of problems that
yeah,
might be.
Yeah, think of the network just, effect, right? Of,
yeah,
of
factorials.
Yeah. Yeah, all the complexity, you know, the systems of systems mm-hmm. complexity on there. And so what they've actually been working towards is on-demand delivery of training material.
Perfect, yes.
Right
exactly.
When you show up in front of the device to say, okay, and if you remember years ago, you and I were talking about, I think, some work that BMW was doing where
yes.
they
on
had
diesel
the,
engines.
The glasses that have the augmented reality stuff that kind of showed your way around the engine, the diesel engine that you need to repair. And
right,
so
right.
this is exactly the type of stuff that they were showing. You know, here is a tractor, and you've got a fuel pump. No, it was a hydraulic pump that keeps failing. Okay. Mm-hmm. And you've got sensors and actuators and all this data coming back to say, hey, this we're starting to see that the lift of part of the tractor is slowing down or is not being responsive. So, you know, this is the type of maintenance you need to do. Oh, by the way, it looks like it's all centered around this one hydraulic pump that's in it, etc. And when you get there, you then know what it is, what the part is that needs to be replaced, and you have the ability to do a 3D model, spin it around, and dig in and see exactly how all the interconnection is happening in order to repair that. But another level of complexity that was added in, which is really cool, is that pump, in this example, was used in 8 different heavy equipment machines.
Wow.
And so,
and each one is a little bit different.
What they were able to discover based off of tracking all this type of machine-to-machine data was that it wasn't a problem with the pump. It was a problem with the pump in that device in the connections and the usage patterns. So you then end up with a product line issue that you're able to identify and trace back to the root and repair a product line without saying, oh, my God, we get this bad pump. We don't have enough data, so we're just going to send out a service announcement and replace it in all 8 of these products.
Right.
So it was pretty cool. And, you know, the like I said, the part that really kind of brought it back to this show was the aspect of understanding that complexity and the interrelationships and then driving the learning aspect at real time at point of delivery need, not, you know, go out to a class and learn about the 8 different tractors and the 8 different ways that the pump could be attached and how you need to do all this. And then when you start thinking about the social aspect of games, you start realizing that the social aspect of machines are coming into play to be important here too.
Wait a second. Social machines?
Oh, yeah. So what's the opposite of social?
Antisocial.
Good answer. So Peter Coffey, do you remember that name?
Vaguely, yes.
So I'm going to step into the Wayback Machine for a while. Yes. Back in the 80s and 90s. Yes. Back in the 80s and 90s, Peter Coffey was a panelist. A columnist for eWeek magazine.
Okay. Yep.
Right? And I went to a conference in 99, I think it was, called Warpstock. Can you imagine what this was about?
Yes, I can. So, okay, and what did he happen to say at that particular conference?
So Warpstock, for those who don't reference that, recognize that, was an OS2 conference done by fans of OS2 at the time. And this was, you know, OS2 was effectively at that point no longer being actively pushed in the market. And so he came and was talking about cool tech and all this stuff. It was just kind of neat. Nothing specific there other than he showed, like, these cool videos and stuff. Anyway, regardless of that. So now fast forward 15 years. And he is now the vice president for innovation and internet technologies or something like that at Salesforce.com.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And Salesforce.com is a big user of Axeda's machine-to-machine platform.
Okay. So yeah. we're now creeping up on social machines. Okay,
yes.
let's keep going.
And the point that he made was the thing that is going to change the trajectory of the machine-to-machine market, which has been around for 40 years. ever since machines had communication capability, they've been talking to each other.
Yes.
Whether that's a SCADA system, you know, or some plant system.
I'm here, I'm alive, yeah, whatever.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the his point, and I'm getting there, his point was, you know, what's the opposite of social? And most people did not come up with antisocial.
And, what did they come up with?
You know, like shy or, you know, some other things were their behaviors that tend to be considered around antisocial. But the point that he made is there's never an example where antisocial is a good thing. Right? Because
okay.
Think of one. Try to come up with one. So if you're in a work environment, you know, the smart guy who sits in the room by himself and closes the door, and when you open the door and you say, hey, I got this problem, do you know the answer to the X? And he goes, here's the answer, and shuts the door. Yeah. That doesn't help you because it's an answer out of context. It doesn't understand the larger context of things. It doesn't understand the downstream implications of that answer, et cetera, right? And so in the machine-to-machine world, where you start having all these different sensors and actuators and machines and messages that in and of themselves, outside of context, might provide you with a piece of data, that's okay, but it's not the real value. The real value is when you start aggregating and pulling together the social interaction between these different machines to provide real insights and real value, that you start having a social Internet of Things. And that's where value is. And, you know,
well, but you can ahead. Have that, and we've had that for 40 years with machines jabbering at one another about the status of this is that, and I'm alive, and here's my heartbeat, and are you there, and I've acknowledged you, and da-da-da-da. I mean, that's, by definition, it's social, but it's machine-level social.
Yeah, but the thing that was interesting was the discussion around standards in this space, right? And so, you know, you have those ANSI or ETSI or, you know, IEEE standards on communication protocols.
ISO, yeah, right,
yeah,
exactly.
But the interesting stuff is kind of the de facto standards that are coming about. And again, reaching back a couple of years to our prior podcast, you had Andy Stanford Clark's Tweeting House.
Yes.
Twitter is becoming a machine-to-machine standard.
Sure. I mean, it's just it's another layer in the stack, and it's a pub-sub model, and anyone can subscribe to anything that's out there.
And while you have had communications happening for 40 years, the value is when you start having social interactions. And that's what you're starting to see with things like tweeting houses, with things like, you know, your scale that can tweet out your weight and pulling that into something like Endomondo, which then can track your workouts, or pulling in your Fitbit information and tying that together, all machine-to-machine data, but exposing it to a real business value or a real M-to-M-to-P value of machines talking to machines that then drive a behavior in a person or in a business or in a service solution, right? And those are the types of things that are starting to happen now that we see real value in.
To me, that's an integration of elements. That's,
absolutely.
That is part of the Internet of Things. That I was thinking that maybe there's something new here. There's something, you know, brand spanking different, because when I do think about social, you know, it is about value and it's about connection and it's about, for me in a lot of ways, it's about serendipity. Maybe there's an ability, because machines have attention spans that are laser focused, that they can be looking for serendipity in a larger analytics context. Maybe that's where machine social becomes more important, because a machine can be listening all the time, whereas you cannot possibly even hope to be looking at your Pinterest or your Facebook set of posts across all the people that you like, know, and follow. You have no hope of ever doing that. So maybe that's a social construct where the machine-to-machine communication and collaboration now begins to curate what's coming in your direction. Maybe.
Maybe. But the thing is, we are now getting to the point where we have this ubiquity of these social networks and these social interactions and these social consolidations of data. Yes. For example, you know, our evil overlord Facebook.
We welcome our new overlords at Facebook, don't we?
Yes. Who are rumored to have made an offer for Waze, which is Waze. Let's face it, is machine to machine data.
Yes, it is.
And now exposing that in order to improve ad services on Facebook.
Well, you know, it's been said many times that if you get something for free, what's being monetized is you.
Absolutely.
Right? So you know, Waze is a really neat service, and I love participating in that community, and I feel like I'm giving back to the community by sharing, hey, there's a road hazard here, or there's a problem there. Or
waving just a couple of fingers at your screen as you're driving.
Yeah. Hi!
And then talking.
And then talking.
Yes.
Yeah, so I mean, there's some good value to that. So I tend to believe the Internet of Things is very real. The concept of social machines feels a little like a stretch for me, but I'm willing to entertain it, and new things will crop out of it as a result. And I think for me, it's because machine attention span is entirely so much larger and longer than squirrel. Anyway.
Well, speaking of squirrels. I found a video earlier this week that we sent out.
Featured a squirrel.
Which had a squirrel in it. It was called Mind Meld, which is an app that's currently in beta for the iPad.
This was the one from Vulcan Productions, wasn't it?
Yeah. So... I invented the Vulcan. No. So the interesting thing here was, again, it was a social aspect, and I know we're stretching our boundaries a little bit because we're not purely talking about the gaming aspect here, but the social aspect was, it was a platform that allowed you and up to seven people to, share information while having a chat, okay? Audio chat or video chat or text chat, right? And it would track things that you're saying and pull those in and find related content on the web in real time to build out kind of a, not a mind map, but a mind...
meld.
Well, I was going to say a mind barf. I'm thinking of blue. Yeah, here's a bunch of blue.
But it's so cool, and there is a game in that, you know. Yep. And the game in that, actually, there's lots of games in that. I don't know if you ever played the game called Everything's Related.
Actually, no.
No, it's a great drinking game. Wonderful drinking game. So you know, you would say something like blue. It's like, okay, great. Then the next person would have to say something. And if there was a connection between blue and whatever the next person said, then the person who had said the second thing has to take a drink.
Oh, so you want to try to find things that have no connection, and then everybody else goes, no. You said berries. I know you were talking about strawberries, but blueberries are also berries, and they're blue.
Bingo. And this game very rarely gets beyond the second word.
But because you lose coherency and you can't actually come up with new words, or you can't come up with the connections anymore, or you just can't speak?
I don't know. This might be an interesting thread to follow because drinking games might have some interesting learning opportunities.
So let's follow that thread for a second. Drinking games at work.
Maybe.
So the M2M conference had a hackathon where people were using like Raspberry Pi and Arduinos and other things to generate interesting and cool M2M applications. Last year's entry, I think actually by the company themselves, was a connected kegerator. And what this does is for the employees at this company... if you're over 21,
yes,
you are given a pint glass with a chip in it. And at a certain time of day, yes, as defined by HR, you're able to walk up to the kegerator and fill it up to two times. It tracks who does it, which beers are liked. It has an interface to, you know, check information about, you know, the quality of the beer, the amount of beer left in the keg, the temperature of the beer, the ratings by people, who came when, how long did they stay, you know, all this information on the kegerator. And, you know, I was thinking, I need one of those.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. I was at a technical session where they actually talked about how they put it together, which was pretty cool. Pretty cool.
So I like that a lot. And it's, I like the marriage between technology and beer. That's right up our alley.
I mean, if you think about it, it's really important that one of the things that drove evolution of mankind is the fact that they needed to sit in one place for a long period of time to grow the grain to make the beer.
Well, and the fact that beer was healthier than the polluted water supplies.
Absolutely.
Most frequently around them. So beer does play a very important role in all kinds of things, social and other.
That's right.
Very cool. So I love those. So we talked a little bit last week about social reciprocity too.
Yes.
and gaming and game related stuff. And
did I just hear snakes?
Yeah, I don't know. You may have. So okay. I have a question for you.
Yes.
How many friends do you have on Tapped Out?
Well, I need to ask you that same question because I don't know how you have so many more snakes than I do. Because right now I have three. I've got a couple of invites out, but I got three.
Yeah. Okay. Well, then you're ahead of me. I've got one friend. And I bet you can guess who that is.
Then how do you have so many freaking snakes? I was going to ask you that. I was like, do you have like all the little blues with their own version of Tapped Out, and they're your friends too, and you guys are just feeding snakes?
Snaking it up. No, we're not. I have one friend, and I just optimize.
You do, because I can't catch up with you.
I know.
I hit level 29, but I can't catch up with you.
But you got the baseball stadium, right?
Finally.
I know.
You must have the new the big snake thing, whatever it is.
I am probably going to hit that plateau later today.
Yeah, well, I just put a bunch of eggs in your house.
Okay, well, good. Well, I've been, you know, as my only friend in this game, you've been the beneficiary of, you know, scadillions of eggs that I've been putting in your direction. So let's kind of come back to that concept.
Yeah, because I want to talk about the reciprocity on that one, because you know, I'm going to sound like I'm bitching about this, but okay, let's go. Let's do this. Let's do this.
You get every egg that I have.
Yeah,
you know?
But you need to buy more land.
Oh, well, I probably do.
Because I have all these eggs that I keep queuing up because I can't give them to you because you don't have the land. And I'm trying to put them all in one place so they're easy to pick. Instead of hiding them all over the place that, like, I get every once in a while where I'm, like, trying to figure out where the heck is that one egg that I can't see. That just drives me completely nuts. So that's like negative reciprocity at that point. That, you know, actively discourages me to giving you eggs.
I did that in the beginning once or twice. Was like, okay, let's make an Easter egg hunt. That sounds like fun.
evil
hand. Just go hide some eggs.
I was sitting there going, okay, maybe if I, you know, go into move things mode and turn off the buildings, I'll find it.
Yes.
And exactly. When I do that, they disappear. I don't see them.
Really?
Yeah.
The eggs disappear? No. You can find them that way. That's how I've had to find them, too.
Well, every time you hide one, I return the favor.
Yeah, but how do you know it's me doing that versus somebody else?
Because it's you.
Yeah, well, that is me. But I haven't done it in a while.
No.
But it was just right, like, so, can
you so, the, so the thing that Phaedra and I were talking about, and Phaedra, we're missing you because you added a lot to this conversation. I know there's even more to think about, is that the, what I loved about it is how do you build systems so that they are encouraging collaboration, they foster collaboration, they drive more collaboration. Yep. And one of the techniques, I think, very much is the way that the eggs are working in this game within a game. Yeah. And so just to kind of refresh the memory or to explain for people who are not playing Simpsons Tapped Out, the way this works is that when you squish a snake, that either turns into a snake and you get a point for that snake, or it turns into an egg. Yep. And the egg will hatch a snake or supposedly potentially give you donuts, which I've never, ever seen.
No, I've seen the eggs hatch eggs.
I haven't seen eggs hatch eggs. I've seen eggs hatch a snake, which then in turn creates an egg.
Yeah, okay. That's fair. Okay.
Right. So the idea here is you're trying to collect snakes, and the more snakes you get, the more prizes that you get, and there's various levels like this baseball stadium that we just mentioned.
Right.
Which then
gives you more missions in the regular part of the game.
I'm expecting that it does. I only had one mission of Homer
going to the baseball stadium. Yeah,
I was hoping for more than that, to be honest with you. And there's a bug there too, because whoever designed the scoreboard for the baseball park, you know, has innings where it should have been balls, strikes, and outs. I don't know if you caught that or not, but. they put innings there. It's like, no, there's not three innings in a game. It's balls, strikes, and outs. And I'm not even a big baseball fan. I mean, I like it, but it's not my thing.
But baseball is a reason to get with friends and drink beer.
Beer and inning. there's a game for you right there.
Yeah, you go for that.
Extra innings, baby.
So, Dean Martunis.
So where we were heading with this was you can create a gamified process where players in the game will have things that are of value to others, not value to themselves, which will encourage them. As you've described, Michael, you've got more invites out now to people because you are like looking to be friends with more people because you can now do more by giving other people eggs or going to hunt for snakes in their virtual Springfield, or you could get eggs back from them from their social reciprocity. It's encouraging you to do that.
Yep.
Because you've got a bunch of eggs, and apparently I don't have enough land to make it easy for you to put them on my property, so you give them to somebody else.
Exactly. So if you would just buy more land, you're trying to get the million credit thingies so that you can buy the tower of toothpicks or whatever it is.
The popsicles, the escalator to nowhere.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
That just looks too silly.
Well, most of the game is too silly, but that's okay.
Well, right. So the what I loved about this is that when you're trying to encourage a population to go through the change management processes to become more social still than they have been, how do you do that? And to me, the snakes and the eggs and the way this kind of works is a way of gamifying social.
Yep.
So that you're encouraging human as opposed to machine behavior to get more engaged. So I don't know if that resonated with you, Michael, if you made that connection.
No, I thought that was great. And the example that you used last week on the cell phone store and the stockouts, I thought that was a perfect example because what you're doing there is actually using the game to optimize a business process.
Well, right, because ordinarily constrained supply creates a hoarding situation.
Yep.
Right. Oh, SKU number 1, 2, 3, 4 is really hot in the marketplace. I don't want to give that to store number 47 because they will make their sales targets and I won't.
Right.
So therefore, I will hoard them whether or not they actually sell. I don't want store 47 to win the big prize. You know, haha, you won't win, but I won't win either. But I'll have the parts.
And really what that is
it's wrong.
Well, what that really is a problem with incorrect incentives. Right.
Yeah,
if you as store number A will not help store number B because it might adversely impact your incentives, you're doing exactly what you're measured on. You're doing exactly what's expected of you. And overall, you're suboptimizing your whole supply chain. If you actually would be, through the game in this example, get something back of value to you, right? then suddenly it opens up a way of improving the entire process. And that's the challenge, right? How do you build your incentives so that you drive the appropriate play?
Yeah, I mean, car dealerships will do this pretty frequently when they have, you know, I've got a blue model and you've got a red model and you have a customer that really wants a blue model. You would call me up and say, hey, Michael, I've got a blue model. Or a customer who wants a blue model, can you please ship me what you have?
Right.
Right. And dealerships, I think, are a little bit different because they're usually owner-operated, owned, independent, as opposed to being satellite of the larger entity. But if there were a larger entity above them, let's just pretend that for a moment, that the car manufacturer owned all the dealerships. The car manufacturer certainly incented to get as many of their products out and in the hands of customers as fast as they possibly can to increase their revenue, their throughput, maximize their manufacturing, doing all those right good things. You know, they would want to encourage that for sure.
Well, they want to increase inventory turnover,
right?
So
right. So, at an individual level, you know, so a franchisee, you still want to increase turnover. You want to make your customers happy there too. But it could be that that I say, well, you know, chances are I'm going to sell this blue thing tomorrow because it's a hot color. It's a, you know, limited edition or whatever. And I might tell you, well, I'd love to give it to you, but I can't, or I'm going to charge you a premium or. And then we've got other market forces in play.
Yep.
So I love the concept of how do you use the game capability to enhance social and drive it forward.
And it's interesting. So let's take it really personal for a second, because I've been trying to figure out how to game development. And if I'm a developer and I'm measured on how many of my work items I can quickly turn around so that I'm driving more things into the build so that we can finish this sprint and get to the next milestone, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. I might be sub-optimized to focus on just my work items. So, getting the right reciprocity set up so that I'm not just focused on my individual work items to go into the next sprint or the next milestone becomes a way of building the right measurements and the reciprocity into the game of doing development. And that's something I'd really like to hear our audience kind of talk about that too, and maybe drop us a couple of notes or some tweets or comment on this episode, because I think there's an interesting game to be had here.
Well, I do too. And here's where I think a key thing is. So let's link it right back to snakes and eggs again, and that is reuse, right?
Absolutely.
How do you build reuse into a way that works just like we've been talking about snakes and eggs?
Absolutely. Well, I know we're out of time for this week's show, and just want to thank everybody for all their feedback that we've been getting lately. And, don't forget to follow us on the various places and things and stuff at games@work_biz on Twitter, or games@work_biz on Facebook, or our games@work.biz page on Google+, or our own accounts. Michael?
Yeah, or just about anything. I mean, we are available like 24/7.
24/7, just like a machine.
Like, well, yeah, but we're, yes.
But we're social.
But we're social.
And
I'm flesh, not
yes,
a machine.
Yes. And Phaedra, we missed you. I hope we'll all be back together next week on games@work.biz.
Yep. Thank you very much. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to games@work.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at games@work_biz or at our website at games@work.biz.